Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man. How are you? I'm a little under the weather right now.
Oh, geez, man. Sound all stopped up.
Yeah, I'm stopped. I woke up. Well, my wife got sick last week, and I thought I was going to catch it, and I thought I was. I didn't catch it. But then Easter Sunday came, and my daughter came over to hang out, and I think she might have had some of it. She just got off work at the a pole dancing place.
Oh, okay.
You know, and my mistress is also a crack whore, so one of them gave it to me.
Yeah, who knows where that could have come from.
I don't know, but I'm fucking sick as a dog right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I made it. I'll be here as long as I can.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you can't hang in there, we understand, but you're a trooper. Is that like a touch of the hantavirus, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe. Me and Gene Hackman, we go way back.
Right.
We banged the same Asian people over and over again while we were in the Marines.
Oh, okay.
Me and him were in the Marines together. I don't know if you know that. He joined just to meet women, and I joined because I left my wife.
Okay.
So anyway, it's a long story.
Right.
Those rats will get you all the time.
Yeah. Well, they're dropping like flies, Manny. Yeah. All these big stars that we've had in our lives for a long time saw.
I just heard on the way here, Santana is dying.
Huh.
He just got rushed to the hospital in Texas, and he's on his deathbed right now. Yes, Santana.
Oh, that's terrible.
He's supposed to play Jazz Fest this weekend or something. And fucking Texas, man. He's on his deathbed right now, and they're still charging him with possession.
Oh,
you know, fuck. I don't understand that at all.
Never give the guy a break,
huh? You know, he's a good guy, but he might be dead. So maybe I'll replace his gig at Jazz Fest.
Okay.
I'll bring out my old band. I'll get the band back together, as they say.
Two Free Stooges.
Well, I don't know. Somebody. Right. Somebody. I'll get the band back together. And what's his name? The guy who runs Jazz Fest. Quint Davis. Yeah, he'll give me a break. He owes me, that guy.
Yeah.
He owes me big time.
You got him out of a jam?
Yeah, I got many jams, man, you know. Anyway, so yeah, Santana's dying and we're here.
We lost Wink Martindale.
Yeah.
I saw one of your friends, you know, had a big career in Memphis as he was the dance party host before he went national.
Yes. And he was like a local bandstand guy.
Right.
What's his name? Dick Clark.
Yes.
Dick Clark. You know, my dad used to work for Dick Clark.
Really? Doing what?
He was Dick Clark's plumber. Anytime he had any kind of plumbing problems, my dad would get the call. He lived out in Malibu near the Pepperdine campus. He had a moat around his house.
Really?
Yeah, he had a moat.
Just for fun, or did he have...
He got that much money, why not?
Okay.
I don't know. My dad didn't understand, but he used to go there and get paid well.
Did he have like a drawbridge that he could...
He had a drawbridge,
wow.
A moat.
Really?
And the top 40 was playing constantly.
Huh.
Over speakers and stuff like that.
Wow.
But he was, you know, my dad enjoyed going out there. I guess there was more there than he tells us. I don't know. He's dead now, both of them, my dad and Dick Clark.
Yeah, they took those secrets to the grave with them.
But apparently he had a great view of the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, you ever been to Pepperdine campus?
I can't recall that.
Oh, man. If you got to go to college, you want to go there to college.
Oh, yeah? It's got to be expensive, though, huh, that location?
I guess it is. I don't know. But you got a view of the Pacific, and, you know, you get to sleep late and stuff. I don't know. I never went. I knew some girls who went there.
Yeah.
You know, they died on PCH.
Oh, man.
Coming home from a frat party. Because that's the problem. The frats and the sororities were on PCH, and it's not a good thing. To have those on PCH.
What about on PCP?
PCP on PC, driving on PCH on PCP. Never a good combination. Never a good combination. I don't know. So we're here. Santana's dying. And the Pope just died.
Yeah, we're not doing so great.
Yeah.
You're not looking great, man.
I don't feel
JD Vance didn't happen to see Santana.
Right, right. Recently. Yeah, I saw our vice president, J.D. Vance, was like the last person to see the Pope alive, practically. You know,
yeah.
I saw him, and
yeah,
the next thing you know, he's dead.
Yeah.
And slipped him a Mickey or something.
Well, that guy, I don't know. This whole administration is going crazy nuts, as they say.
Yes.
And we'll see what happens with JD. I mean, that whole cabinet's falling apart, is what I can gather.
Yeah.
What's the Secretary of Defense?
Hegseth.
Yeah, he's like, he's taking a drink every 5 minutes, you know, doing speeches and stuff like that. You know, he seems like he's got problems. You know, he should just quit while he's ahead.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. Well, they can't fall apart soon enough.
Well, let's hope. Yeah. I don't know. They seem like idiots running the asylum. You know, what are we going to do?
Right, right.
What are we going to do? We're going to just have to stick around and see what happens for the third act.
Sure.
You know.
See where the ship's
going. And we're only
going.
In the first act.
Oh, geez.
A very long first act.
Right, right.
I mean, this first act's going to go like, you know, it's like watching your kid in the kindergarten play. You know, it's just like, when is this going to end? You know, the only thing exciting up there is the teacher.
Right.
You know, who's, you know, orchestrating the whole act, you know. Anyway, I digress.
Right, but, right, right.
So what's going on with you?
Oh, just... playing some gigs, you know. We had a big Susan Cowsill gig over the weekend where we did like two full albums of Joni Mitchell music, the entire Blue record, and then the entire Court and Spark
record.
So
who was the crowd? A very large group of yammering bitches? It sounds like it would be for me.
No, well, it was a large group that was totally filled there. The outdoor stage, they had seating in... all on the dance floor, and the whole thing was filled, and the audience was rapt. You could hear a pin drop in there when we were playing this music. It was...
were they just asleep?
No, well, I don't know. They had their eyes open, so it's hard to tell, yeah. But yes, they were very attentive. It was a great night, beautiful night, beautiful weather. So that was very
every
successful.
Gig of yours is just great. You don't have a bad gig.
Well,
this guy never has a bad gig.
I don't talk about the bad gigs.
Well,
you know?
Why
I don't,
not? People are interested in that stuff.
Well,
our listeners,
know,
I think, are interested in bad gigs.
Well, if something really...
I have a bad day, I tell people
about
it.
Well, if something really remarkable happens. But, you know, you try not to take gigs that are going to be bad, and you try to make...
But bad things happen to good gigs.
Well, sometimes
you know?
They do. And
so let's talk about it.
Or does it have to have the 10-year... remove for you to talk about it.
Right,
maybe.
Right, right. Well, you know something that I might have been saying this to you, Mark, the other day, or no, someone, but I used to think, well, I can tell a story on the podcast about something that happened on a band that's you know, maybe, you know, not so great, as long as or they possess a quality that's not so great, as long as I don't say who it is. And then I realize that if I do that, everybody I work with will think maybe it's me.
Right, right, right.
So that's not a good approach either. But
maybe you need like code names for everyone you play with.
Nah,
and all that.
Just,
yeah.
Come on. We're all in our old. We're all old people. Just name names. Who
well,
cares anymore?
I will when something
the memoir
something
for your memoir
comes up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So that gig happened.
That was
all
good.
The
yeah,
women
yeah.
Women were coming in their pants.
Well, perhaps know, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure. It was
fingering their clitorises.
Joni,
I remember you, Joni.
It was definitely some resonance with the crowd. The material.
Okay. All right. Now, is that a good crowd for guys to get laid at? You know, Joni Mitchell double album cover band?
You know, it's it depends.
You know, I mean, there's probably a lot of single women there who
could be,
who
if you were
desperate.
If you were a little bit, maybe someone our age or a little bit older, it would be a fertile ground for
for unfertile women.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be the case.
Yeah. So there's no problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You don't have to worry about
protection.
And
they'll just say thank you.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Well,
it's all good.
Something to keep in mind.
You guys won a Grammy for this show?
Yes, they've already mailed it to us.
Live Grammy.
Well, you know, something I wanted to talk about, I saw, you know, people are crazy with riding the bicycles in New Orleans, and even to be riding very carefully, I think you're taking your life in your hands. People obviously don't know how to drive for shit in New Orleans, at least if you have a car. They're just crashing into your car as opposed to killing you. But I'm driving here in this neighborhood where we are. It's like on Pine Street, so it's a narrow street. You know, there's cars on both sides.
And you're fucked up on Flocka.
I'm fucked up on Flocka. Oh. There's a girl riding on her bicycle on the left-hand side of the street.
Was she good looking?
And I can see she's a younger woman. You know, it's
But was she hot?
She was
simple question. She was yes okay. or no?
She was fine. She was lovely. But she's that's not the point of the story. But
the point of the story is that you ejaculated when you crashed into her.
Well, no.
No, okay.
Not yet. Don't get ahead of me.
Oh, okay.
But as I get close to her, I see that she's looking at her phone with one hand. She's riding the bicycle, and she has over-the-ear headphones on, like we have.
The
right
big canned ones. I never understood how that became. It went out of the studio into the street. Those headphones.
Well, you can't hear shit, right, man. So, right. You know, you can't hear a car coming up behind you. And I'm about half a block behind him going, look at this person. This is insane.
That's when you slam on the horn. That's what I usually do.
I bet right. you do.
Yeah. Just get out of my way, young bitch.
Listening to
Joni Mitchell's two albums.
Looking at the phone, reading something. And not just glancing at the phone, like picking a new song, like reading an article. She's riding the bicycle.
And where the potholes around here? Does she not understand that crazy. You know she's gonna flip over that
today,
bike?
We have young kids, me and you. They're stupid. They just don't understand. Like, get a clue, man.
So anyway, I pulled up to her and got right alongside her and just started like looking at her, you know. And then she finally noticed me after 10 seconds, and I just had to start laughing at her, you know. And she's like. Then I pulled off, and I'm sure she's thinking, what an asshole, laughing at me. I'm
right,
like,
right.
Jesus, girl.
You saved her life.
I have a death wish. I'm sure she went right back to it.
Yeah.
Well, we had something in the news yesterday, I saw it in the news today, but on Monday we had a typical rainstorm in New Orleans, you know, kind of spring rainstorm, and all the streets immediately flooded. I could barely get to mid-city and saw so many cars like on Norman Francis Boulevard, everything in the right-hand, everybody that was parked there, the entire right-hand lane was swamped. They probably had water, you know, up inside the vehicles. And,
our fearless leader was out of town.
She was out of town, of course, you know. But then I saw an article in the newspaper today about it, and they said the officials from Surge and Water Board said, well, we had 5 pumps that were out of service that day, and 1 power generator was out of service.
Oh,
but don't worry, because we calculated that even if they'd been working, it still would have flooded.
Oh,
great.
Nice. That's comforting.
Yeah.
Aren't a lot of the parts... wooden parts in the that's what I
yeah a lot of the old pipes are still wooden to this day. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I heard about
that's
that
medieval
like 15 years ago after Katrina. I heard about that. It's like, really?
Yeah,
wooden.
And they still are. and they have to go to specialty people to fix them because no one knows how to fix.
But yet they still know they've installed smart meters in front of everyone's house.
Right.
Smart meters.
Right.
Which they installed one in front of our house like in February, and I still haven't got a bill yet since February.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm very scared.
Wow.
I'm very, like very
$10,000 bill.
Yeah, who fucking knows? I have
or
no idea.
Or could be very smart. Maybe you'll never get them.
Well, maybe, maybe.
Could be the smartest thing ever.
A stupid meter. I don't know. You know, but yeah, so we'll see what happens. Last time I fought a bill with them, I made the mistake of going down there and arguing the bill, and they gave me some lame excuse, and I said, man, and it was a black woman with a black assistant and another black person, and I said, you fucking people are all the same. Not meeting black people, I mean...
the people that work in Surge and Water Board.
Utility company, right, as a whole. And I lost my case right then and there.
Yeah. It's not going to get better after that.
No. But they did validate my parking.
Okay, well, it's not at all.
So that's a victory for me.
I'll take that
when I can.
I got charged from Entergy. I rent an apartment here, and I got charged the highest electrical bill on a month that I wasn't even here.
Jesus.
And I tried to appeal it. They came out and read the meter, and they said, the meter's accurate.
So how can that be? Someone's coming in your house.
Yeah. You can't fight City Hall.
Well, now
that's one thing I learned.
Energy is being taken over by a new company now. Energy is now going to be, I forget their name, but I just got a notice from them just a month ago that Energy will now be called something else. I don't know what they're going to be called. It starts with a P, I think.
All right.
For, I don't know.
I'm sure they'll be much better.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know.
The new name.
That always happens when the company's bought. It always gets better.
Yeah. Well, you have anything else, Manny?
Let me see real quick.
Because I had something interesting.
Oh, yeah. Talk about it.
Okay. So, you know, being on social media, it allows people to kind of see you who maybe have forgotten about you or something. Somehow, this guy through the Troubled Men podcast Instagram page messaged me. Uh-huh. And he said, hey, man, do you remember... one time when you were in Nashville and you went to this club 12th and Porter and saw a band and you started hanging out with some people and we went to somebody's house and you hilariously roasted their record collection and then you went to someone else's house and crashed on their couch. That was my couch.
Oh.
And I was like, I do remember that night. I remember everything about that night.
Oh.
But I was like, yeah, I remember you were very kind to me. Thank you.
And he was okay with that. He wasn't like, hey, you did.
No.
You were a slob.
We had a fun night. It's just I'd never met these people before. I just met them at the club. We started hanging out. You know, they're like, hey, come to this party with us. I'm like, all right. And they're like, well... where are you going? I'm like, well, I'm staying way out in Franklin. I'm way too loaded to drive out there. You know, and they're like, well, come stay at our house. I'm like, all right.
Now, so, did you use paper towels while you were there?
I didn't shower when I was there. I just slept on the couch and got up and left the next day.
So
now,
you jerked off into Kleenex instead.
Yeah. I think so. It's if I can recall. But the next day I took a cab, I think, to where my car was by the club. And I was supposed to go pick up the rest of the band from the airport because we were going to start mixing our record up in Nashville. And I get in the car and realize that I'd left the dome light on, so the battery is dead.
So
I had to call another cab and have them jump me, and I was able to pick the band up. It all worked out.
Did you remember the people? Did they look...
I wouldn't remember. I wouldn't be able to pick them out of a lineup. But the guy has since become a fan of the podcast, and I think that's how he just kind of put it together. It's like, oh, this is that guy that's left on my couch.
Well, what's his name?
Andrew. Shout out to Andrew.
Andrew, thank you. Andrew.
That's Southern hospitality right there.
Yeah, no, he was a prince, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I got.
Well,
maybe we should get to our guest.
Yeah,
huh?
Sure. Let's get to our guest.
All right. We have a terrific guest. He's his resume, his CV, as they call it, is overwhelming. He's an award-winning writer, author, playwright, journalist with the Washington Post. His writing also has appeared in the New York Times, The Guardian, Chicago Tribune, New York Magazine, Mojo, Downbeat, on and on and on. He was the Midwest Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor for 7 years. And he's spent a lot of time in this area here, down here, like covering the BP oil spill and the Katrina recovery. He's also the pop music critic for the Chicago Daily Herald for 11 years, and he's the author of a book that just came out last year, a terrific book called Country and Midwestern, Chicago in the History of Country Music and the Folk Revival.
Oh.
And that book was named 2024 Book of the Year by a whole bunch of different places, Nashville Country Music Society and all. He also was taught journalism at the University of Illinois at Chicago and had many plays produced. We're going to get into all that, but without further ado, the great Mr. Mark Guarino. Welcome,
hey,
Mark.
Hey, fellas. Hey. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
I'm a fan of the podcast, so it's...
Oh, good.
It's like, I don't know, being in a film by your favorite director or something.
Like you're in the film.
I'm in the film now. I've entered the frame.
Does that feel
hearing
weird?
You guys talk, I'm like, am I listening to the podcast in my car? Yeah.
Right.
It's kinda,
just remember to hit your mark and say your line, you'll be all right.
Right.
You guys are just everything I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Good.
Well, you know, I have those relationship with like kind of group podcast where they're all friends, and I feel like I'm their friend. They're my friends too.
Right.
You know, they just can't hear me. But and now you're
that's the mark of good
us.
Radio. You know, it's like yeah.
Yes, I love radio, theater of the mind.
Theater
you know?
Of the mind.
It's so much, but like everybody's into the video podcast.
No.
You know, and to me, it takes me out of it. You know, when I see them there sitting in a room, it looks goofy.
When I was a kid, I was really into radio. I didn't watch a lot of TV. I was really into radio.
Yeah.
And then I would get into like really old radio from like the 30s and 40s and 50s. You know, discover that I was like, what is this?
Right.
You know? And it, for all the reasons you just said.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was a huge fan of Dr. Demento.
Oh, yeah.
You probably
were
as well.
Of course,
you
yeah.
know, it was the right time period for our age
absolutely.
Group.
Absolutely. I had the records, too. And then also, what was a Fire Sign Theater? That was that British comedy troupe. They put all these comedy records.
The Lemmings.
Sketches.
No, not the Lemmings.
But the Lemmings, I think that was like
the
an
Lemmings
improv
were in New
group.
York.
Yeah.
No, I know who you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well,
anyway.
Well, at some point in New Orleans, they started on maybe WWNO or something. One of the stations, they started playing, like you're saying, those old radio plays. They're fascinating.
Yeah, man. They are. You know, it's sort of. It's interesting because I oftentimes I think, could you do that today? And I don't know if you could because I don't think people, I think people's attention span, they couldn't just sit there and listen to something. But yet they listen to podcasts.
Right.
So they do have it in them. But so,
well, it's all narrow casting. So if you did that, there would probably be an audience for it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
and
true.
Somebody would be listening to it. But, you know, it probably wouldn't get hugely popular. Who knows? People listen to all kind of weird stuff.
Right.
That's
right.
For sure. Well, Mark, let's go back a little bit. Give us, you're not from New Orleans.
I'm not.
Won't have to ask you where you went to high school here.
You still can, but okay. you won't know the high school.
Well, so tell us, you're from Chicago, is that correct?
I did. I am. I grew up in Oak Park, which is right next to Chicago.
Oh, yeah. I stay in Oak Park all the time when I play at Fitzgerald's.
Fitzgerald's, yeah. That's where all the bands stay. Yep, absolutely. So I grew up probably about a mile and a half from Fitzgerald's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I always say when I was in my 20s, Fitzgerald's was kind of when my friends were going to graduate school and leaving Chicago, I had an apartment near Fitzgerald's, and Fitzgerald's was my graduate school.
Okay.
Because I just went there all the time, and I learned about all this music I knew nothing about, and because it was curated so well, that club.
Yes.
It was just, you know, it was the only club at that time that had all this great music from Texas and Louisiana and just music-rich areas, and they weren't playing anywhere else but Fitzgerald's. And
right.
So it was like going to school. It was great, yeah.
Yeah, well, Bill, you know, he, as you said, he was, Bill Fitzgerald was so good at picking bands. He was such a music fan. You know, he was the first person to see the Iguanas during Jazz Fest, like in 1991, first year we played Jazz Fest, but we played still had our Maple Leaf Sunday night gig, and Bill saw us at that, and on the strength of that one gig, invited us to come play the American Music Festival over 4th of July, and you know, that's such a great showcase of, you know, having all these Americana bands and folk bands and, you know, roots rock bands, and put us in there in front of that audience. And suddenly we had a career in Chicago just overnight.
He designed that festival to be like the Jazz Fest,
right.
You know, like this little mini version of Jazz
mm-hmm.
Fest, but, you know, with multiple stages, pretty much the similar music and food. And it's still going today. But it's for someone, and at that time when I was going, a lot of those old time people like Bo Jacques were still alive.
Yes.
And so it was just like, I mean, I couldn't, it was like entering another world,
right.
Stuff, you know, it was like, wow. And so that was like an entry point for me. I mean, I wasn't even writing about music at the time, and I just learned, it was just exciting.
Well, so going back a little bit, you had a family there in Oak Park, mom, dad, siblings.
Yeah. So big family, and they were all kind of from that area. Later, I learned both my parents' families going way back from the Chicago South Side. My mom was German Irish family, and then my dad's Italian family further south.
Uh-huh.
And but I learned that his family actually came to the U.S. through New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah, they were part of the Sicilians that kind of came up here and lived here for a while and got on the train and went north. So,
interesting.
So I learned that out, you know, much later.
Right, right. Yeah. So when you're in high school, are you already starting to write? Or are you, like, writing for the school newspaper?
Yeah. I wrote for the paper very briefly, but I wrote, I had a creative writing class, you know, it was kind of your classic thing, just a teacher who was really encouraging and you know, this guy was, he would have...
He molested you?
He didn't molest me, no. He didn't. Not that one. I blanked out the other one.
Sure, yeah. That's best. All for
we all
that's
do. What happens,
right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's a survival.
You know, I'm
going to
remember maybe when I'm like, in my 70s, I might remember.
Okay.
That might come back to me.
So next year, then. Right?
Yeah, next year, exactly. I know it's dark in here, but come on. But yeah, so I had a great teacher, and I was always reading, and yeah, it was a great outlet.
Now, were you reading the classics or like the beatniks?
I was no, I, you know what?
Were
I never
reading,
really,
you know, I don't know what were you?
I never got into the beatniks. I know it's unpopular to say. I never really fully, except I was reading a lot of plays.
Kerouac was a jerk, if you ask me.
You know what? I never, Kerouac,
think he was a jerk.
I never got all, you know, I know that I was supposed to like him, but I never
cool,
did.
Yeah. You know,
his whole
Ginsburg,
writing.
I just thought, you know, he was fluffy for me.
Ginsburg, you know, Howell, I thought
that
was great.
Pretty good.
That's good.
Now, Burroughs,
yeah.
I liked.
Yeah.
I felt
Burroughs,
like
I liked.
Burroughs, yeah, good. But then I felt like when Ginsberg, when reading about the time when he was glomming on to Bob Dylan.
Right.
Kind of turned me off to Ginsberg a little bit. He was the generation above Bob Dylan. So here's Bob Dylan, this, like, young star. But, like, I don't know, all those photos of Ginsberg kind of standing behind him and just like...
Well, he was in love with him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that was going on.
Zimmerman.
Yeah.
He wanted to bang him.
Bob used all those people.
Yeah,
you know,
he
it's
used
like
them
he,
all.
He walked through all of them.
Right.
Yeah. You know? It's kind of fascinating that he had that fortitude to, like, he's meeting all these people who are famous in his youth.
Yeah.
And then he meets him and he's like, eh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't allow himself to be manipulated
or co-opted. And he's not in awe of any of them either.
Right.
I think that made him more appealing for those people.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think Pete Seeger, he was
an asshole.
You know, in awe of him.
Uh-huh.
But the rest of them, it's interesting.
Did you see that movie about
Dylan? I did.
I wasn't impressed with it at all. I thought it was an okay film. I was prepared
not to like it, but then I thought, I guess I thought, like, if it's going to turn people on to this, because a lot of my books about that period of time, and I thought, and to
I
me,
gotta
I
read
think
one
that,
of them.
Yeah, you got to read one of them. It's a good, if it's not holding up your door, you can always open it up. but that period of time, I think, is like, I think people really haven't fully discovered or gone into that whole folk revival period of time.
Right.
Because, you know, we hear all about the 60s, psychedelic 60s and everything beyond punk and everything. I just think that that period of time is like really fascinating because it really was this major culture change. And so at least the movie, I felt like, all right, kind of... put people in that direction.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I didn't, I just thought it was had good production value and that's about it. I didn't think like the guy who played Dylan, I didn't think he was worthy of a nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl played Dom. I don't think any of them were worthy of any awards or anything, but I guess it was a light year. I mean,
I think one of the problems when you do these movies where they have to embody sort of these
but they
cultural
got Zimmerman's
icons.
Blessing. He got Zimmerman's blessing.
Yeah.
Filmmaker.
Oh, which is rare.
Yeah.
But I think it's like the thing is that oftentimes when these movies where they're sort of they have to be these kind of famous, not just famous people, but kind of cultural icons.
Right.
You can't get away from you feel sometimes you're being kind of a caricature. You know, the performance feels like it's like how could anyone do Elvis? You know, it's today it'd be impossible to do. And I think the same way with like Johnny Cash.
Leonard Nimoy did Elvis.
Did he really do?
Elvis I ever saw.
I had to see that one.
It was a TV production back in ABC Movie of the Week.
Was that post Star Trek? It must have been post Star Trek.
Yes, it was post Star Trek.
Yeah, had to have been. Wow, yeah.
That's something to look up.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy was Elvis the early years.
No, wow.
Crazy.
Yeah. And he never took out that ear makeup. Okay. Which is crazy.
Did he do the death? Did was it Elvis going around giving the death thing on the shoulders?
Shook the hips.
Yeah. You know,
the only thing I liked about that Dylan movie is that it just made me want to smoke cigarettes so bad. Mm-hmm.
He smoked a lot of cigarettes in that. Yes. Always.
And everyone smoked cigarettes in that movie, and I just wanted to smoke cigarettes so badly, and I can't anymore because I only have one lung.
Yeah,
I only have one lung, one
candy
kidney.
Cigarettes, one lung. Maybe candy one cigarettes. Lung to
give. Yeah,
I thought the kid did a good job of the Dylan mannerisms and stuff, you know, and the body language, the hunch, and all of his. I don't know.
But you know what? I think the best Dylan movie is that movie, I'm Not There.
That's it. That's
cool. I think that one is great because, who's the woman who.
Cate Blanchett plays
she
Dylan.
And the mannerisms you're talking about. Yeah. I felt like it was like watching those old black and white press.
Like from Don't Look Back or something.
It's amazing. She was. It's incredible. I feel like that movie. Because it's not literal, but yet it is. It's like it's literal to the truth of what happened, but it's not. They didn't care whether.
Now, who will play Santana in the Santana biopic?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Cheech Marin.
You know, I was thinking that same thing, but he's too old. I mean,
Cheech he might
Marin
be too
could
old.
Play him could on
play,
his deathbed.
Play now,
Benicio del Toro.
Benicio del Toro, that's a good pick.
He's no spring
chicken. Jaime Velasquez, who's an ex-UCLA Bruin basketball player.
That would be a break.
You know,
they would call that a breakthrough choice.
Yeah. He's gone pro. He's with the Miami Heat now.
All right.
He's a good player. He averages like 8 points, 4 rebounds.
He's probably making more money doing that.
But let's get together and write that script.
Someone's doing it right now. You know.
Oh yeah. The Santana. Story?
Yeah, the second that guy started fell ill, you know, somebody was like, "We gotta get this thing out."
The book too.
The
quickie book.
Yeah.
Well, so you're writing in, and you have a good creative writing teacher. You pursue this in college.
So I went to Loyola in Chicago.
Okay.
And I day one got on the school paper. I had a column. Day one all the way through the last day of my senior year. Then I ended up running the newspaper. And really kind of the journalism thing, it's funny, you know, I at that time Loyola didn't have a journalism curriculum whatsoever, except for the school paper. So I used it I got paid to be on the paper. It was very self-run, and I discovered kind of how journalism was a great way for any creative writer to kind of learn about the world, because I was kind of on my own to run this paper and with all my friends, and we were in the North Side of Chicago, which was kind of in that point in time where the school was kind of a pretty gritty part of the city, and it was like a kid in the candy store. You know, it was like I could go write about anything I wanted to.
North Side, what school is that?
Loyola.
Okay, Loyola.
Yeah, right on the lake.
Now, where's Columbia?
Columbia is downtown.
Downtown by the lake.
Yeah, downtown by the lake.
Yeah.
And so Loyola's right all the way, right below Evanston.
Okay.
And, so in a neighborhood called Rogers Park.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of like Rogers Park at the time, still like that now, not as much, but it was like the last bastion of the old hippies were hanging out there. You know, it was really a lot of social justice organization, a lot of coffee shops, a lot of folk singers walking around.
Yeah.
And it was kind of this like where the rest of the city had changed a lot. Rogers Park was kind of frozen.
And what year is this again for you?
This was 88.
Oh,
yeah. When
so
I got
this
there,
is way past like the heyday of like, Second City and all that.
Well,
kind of
Second
stuff.
City
is still
was,
around.
Yeah,
you know,
at that point
producing
it was
seeing great people.
At that point, you know, it was still and that great people at that point in the 90s as well.
What part of town is that?
So that's in Old Town, which is you jump on Lakeshore Drive and you're there in 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cuz I went and toured campuses in Chicago with my daughter. I think it was that break between when Katrina was happening and it didn't happen.
No, COVID, you mean?
Yeah, COVID. COVID.
Oh, COVID.
We get our
and we went there and we stayed. Yeah, we get our horrible problems.
Right,
but we were there in Chicago, staying right on the lakefront. We went and toured Columbia. And that's a fabulous place.
Yeah, downtown right there. It's unbelievable.
Oh, man, yeah. And then we went, what's the art school right near?
Art Institute.
Yeah, the Art Institute. Man. We were there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my daughter hooked up with a dealer, and that was it.
Okay. So, she was back on the pole.
That was it for back in the pole.
Yeah, that was
that was it for staying in Chicago and destroying her life, or that was just it in just in general?
Well, that was it for studying. Basically.
Got it. Yeah.
But anyway, she's a good kid.
Yeah,
I haven't heard from her in years.
Okay. Well,
she seems all right.
At least she's not asking you for money.
Yeah. Well, not yet.
Not yet. No.
Anyway, but I'll be asking you guys for money later.
She hasn't sent you any limbs or fingers
an ear. No, she hasn't sent
her mind
an ear.
Yeah. Nothing like that. She's a good kid. In fact, she lives 2 blocks away.
Oh, okay. Right. All right. Good.
Lives right over here.
Staying close.
Good. She's staying out of Snake and Jake's. That's
absolutely.
She's positive. Not legal yet.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Mark.
But yeah, no. So that that was my training. I mean, it's kind of self,
right?
You know,
yeah, no,
directed training.
Yeah. Well, that's the like many things. I would imagine doing it is the best teacher. Like you do it and get better. If you have some talent, you put your attention and time towards it, you improve, and that's how anybody gets good at anything, right?
I think that's true. I mean, I always feel like journalism schools, to me, are a little bit of a scam. They're very expensive, and maybe they'll get you some internships. But, I mean, really, the main thing I tell, I mean, sometimes when I'm asked, just like, read, number one, learn, read, and then go ahead and just do it. I mean, the great thing about journalism is really anybody can do it, but you do have to learn how to do it, and oftentimes you learn how to do it just by doing it. It's a circular thing,
right?
And also, but the main thing to have is curiosity about people. Mm-hmm. If you're not curious about people, if you're not just then, you know, it's the absolutely wrong profession to do it.
Sure.
You know, if you don't like people.
Yeah, I don't
or just like
people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. No, stay at home. Do not get into journalism. But if you're kind of, I mean, when I was a young reporter, I remember I covered the most boring, it was some suburb of Chicago, kind of near the Wisconsin border. And I was very early, I mean, I was right out of college, and I was covering things like taxes or just like, you know, just stuff that was happening to this community, these communities near the Wisconsin border. People were double my age. But actually, I got really into it because, like, journalism allows you to, people open up to talking to you. Mm-hmm. You know, people tell you their story, and there's no other profession really that gets you, you know, makes that happen. And so suddenly something that may seem boring or people that might seem like, oh, they have nothing to say, you realize really quick everyone has something to say. Everyone has something, and that kind of goes back to.
But do you want to listen to it?
You learn as time goes on. You got that filter, and you realize, all right, that person's going to be worth talking to. Maybe not that person.
He'd be screaming the same thing on the street corner all day long.
That's true. But the thing is that I was coming up at the same time that Studs Terkel was putting out his books, and he had a radio show. My father loved him, and I got to meet him once. And I think that's sort of like the romance of what he did was so embedded in Chicago as well, of just that, you know, the person who, like, the common person on the street has something as worthy to say as the mayor of your city. You know?
Right. Well, Chicago has such a
thing.
Chicago has such a tradition of these, like, great writers, big writers, you know, like guys with big personalities who, I mean, that must have been inspiring to you.
Yeah. One time I remember when I was in college, I wanted to, and I had a column, and Mike Ryko was writing a column at the time. And I thought, and I had great memories of my dad growing up, like hearing him laugh, because, you know, the morning he'd be reading Mike Ryko's column. I knew exactly what he was doing. And so I remember one time I was like, I'm going to put together all these columns. I'm going to go down to the Tribune, and I'm going to, you know, hand them to him and just to see what happens. Well, I got into the Tribune, and I got to his assistant. I handed it to him. I never heard from him. But the excitement of getting it over there was, I think, enough, you know, because he was writing, you know, at that time. And so these people were, I mean,
so
that's the thing that's going now.
He never snuck it in for your dad to read it?
He never what?
Snuck in your story, Mike.
No. I know.
Oh, okay.
The thing is that these people were all kind of There's
crazy.
Not. I mean, well, the thing is that there's not a lot of columnists anymore. We're sort of that's the thing I feel like. Like the voices and just characters and that sort of thing, writing.
Yeah, that's all.
That's
good.
Starting to
yeah.
go. That's yeah. that's disappearing.
It's over.
It's more it's or less. Over. It's yeah, it's near over. The end.
Well, you know, we were talking the other day at the Iguana show there at the Broadside, which
yeah.
I didn't mention, but we were talking about a couple of things. One about just the overall arc of intellectual property being demonetized, and you know how you know publications were when you started, how the music business was when I started, and when you were covering it, and you know we've all gone through a similar
yeah.
arc, you know. But
yeah, when I started, it was before the digital divide, which whatever you
right.
want to call it, and then I got to see what happened afterwards, and. There's some advantages to it, but you do see how, like, things were, especially with newspapers, so poorly handled when all that stuff started to happen. And I feel like they alienated their own audiences. You know, the big thing was like, well, people don't want to read anymore, you know, and so therefore, you know, we need to
Amen.
Cut staff.
Some people do.
So, yeah, you.
I know.
Yeah, well,
I like to watch TV.
Yeah, yeah, like, what's yeah. the guy?
You were
being there.
Well, the newspaper I was working at the time, they reacted to the internet by saying, well, let's make all the photos big and let's do more celebrity news.
Right.
Because,
yeah.
you know, more stories about Britney Spears
uh-huh.
and less local.
Everybody
and
wants.
And less local and less look because that's she was huge at the time.
Right.
And less local coverage, less. And I thought, wow, this is the work. You know, do you understand that people haven't changed? It's just this technology thing changed.
Right.
So before the technology changes the people, you know, just don't. You know, you got to double down on why people liked you and what was your value. In the first place, and your value was local voices, you know, having something essential that people can't find anywhere. It wasn't just becoming more bland. And so, but you saw a lot of newspapers, they start, you know, getting rid of all their columnists, getting rid of their arts coverage, doing more wire copy, just doing things that basically made them look and sound like everything else. And so guess what? Nobody wanted that.
Right.
And so
right.
their readership just tanked. And so it was amazing to me that was the early reaction to like, well, we got to get rid of all of our personalities and we need to get rid of all of like things that are covering, that are defining our local character.
And that's really where their bread and butter
yeah.
was in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is fascinating, Mark, but I'm looking at my drink and the clock and Manny, I think it's that time.
Yeah, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
I'm so damn tired being poor. Settle for less, but I want more. There's a sofa in a pothole on my street. The power's out, nothing to eat. Home in a bookstore on my way. Can't get a job and I can't get laid. We might be drowning in debt. But it's not over yet. It's not over yet. You can try to forget. It's not over yet. Gator.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coman, back with our guest, Mr. Mark Guarino. Now, Mark, I know you are familiar with the show, so you understand that we have the love and support of our listeners. That's our really only sustenance. And, you know, we receive that through the PayPal and Venmo links that we
supported
have.
Supported people.
The show notes. And I have to say, we don't have any shout-outs this week, because once again, it's a little bit of a dry spell for the old Trouble Men podcast. So that's okay. We soldier on. It's you know. And but for those of you who are enjoying the show, please avail yourself of those links. Also, we have the Patreon page, and for those beloved patrons who are supporting us week in and week out, you can sign up and join their ranks. Also, we have the link for the Troubled Men podcast T-shirts.
Oh yeah,
which are flying off the shelves.
Yeah. Oh, are they?
No, not really. One of them flew off the shelf.
I gotta look. I'll look that up. Maybe I'll be your next.
Okay.
Well, you know, I just heard a troubled men guest. I just had a conversation with them over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Brent Ryder and Abby Wool.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Are my good friends from Los Angeles.
Yes, I remember
them.
Yeah, yeah.
They went up to Northern California to celebrate the 50th wedding anniversary of some mutual friends of
ours. Oh, okay. Wow, 50, man.
Yeah.
We got some old friends. Yeah, yeah. 50th wedding anniversary for friends of ours. It's not.
And they're both 75 years old,
right?
These
okay.
people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it was up in NoCal, and so Brent Ryder, who's a good guy,
yes,
he called me, and I couldn't take the call, but I called him later, and it was a great celebration from old friends of mine from L.A. The Todd and Linda Darling, who were hippies who didn't want to give it up. Back in the 80s, they would still have parties and everyone would be naked. It was
really?
It's like, not working anymore.
Yeah.
Man. Okay, you know. And I asked Brandt, I said, is that party you're at right now, is everyone naked? He said, no.
That's good.
But back then, it was the first time I would actually, you know, it was back, I was a high school kid and I met my friend Brandt. And he lived in Venice, California, and he knew these people that that were celebrating their 50th this weekend. And I went over to this house. I was 17, and everyone's naked. And I'm like a punk rock kid, and it's like, fuck this.
Yeah, you aren't going to get naked.
No, I'm not getting naked.
It sounds good on paper. I mean, that's one of the things. It sounds good.
But, I mean, there was like out of the 20 people who were naked, there was like two that were like, well, I don't mind looking at that.
Right.
<You know. laughs>
But then the naked people get upset at those people.
It's
a low percentage. Yeah.
Naked's not a good look for anyone. Really.
No, I'm saying.
It's, I feel like good.
That's why they have the dark.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. That's right.
But anyway, so yes, you can buy the Troubled Men Podcast T-shirts there. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Helps us a lot. Cost you nothing. Nobody ever reviews or rates the show. I just say that every time. Just for my
nobody
own,
even hits the star rating either.
No, that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, we've had a bunch of them, but not in a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know. People would be on that
because technology is beyond us now. I think.
Right.
I don't think we're a part of the technology.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's his gig.
That seems like enough of that. You know, you can find all my dates on Renee Coleman Facebook page.
I saw one of your dates that you posted last week that you said you're invited, invitation only, but then you wanted me to buy a ticket. I didn't understand that.
Well, yeah, you're invited to buy a ticket. Our guest here bought a ticket to that.
Well, I don't understand that, but that's an oxymoron. It's like, this is your invitation, you're invited, now pay me.
Well, yeah.
Well, that doesn't make sense. If you're invited to a party, then you're invited, right?
I understand the nomenclature that you're
nomenclature. What the fuck does that mean? Nomenclature.
I don't know.
What the fuck?
I think that's the second time that word's come up on the podcast.
I like that
but
word.
But you said invitation only. You're invited. Now fuck you. Pay me.
Well,
it doesn't make sense.
You're invited to come see the band play to a private audience.
No, but it said invitation only. You're invited. Now buy a ticket. Doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Make sense at all to me.
I'll have to take that into it. I didn't create the
poster. I don't know who you did. Who dealt that with for your band.
You know?
That was a loose gravel band, right? Yeah, the loose gravel
loose
band.
Cattle. Yeah,
loose cattle. Now, I don't know who's doing your advertisement for that band, but that's horrible.
You know, Manny, I go along to get along. I can't be running everything.
Well, you try to, at least.
I got my hands full with this. Go ahead, Mark.
No, that was horrible. Go ahead, Mark.
No. I was. Yeah.
Your name is Mark, right?
I'm just happy to be here.
We're all happy to be here. Happy to be somewhere.
Yeah. I got your book.
I got a drink. I know you got my book.
Let us present you with the Troubleman podcast, because I know you've gotten some before, but this is you know the part of the show where we give you even more.
I love it.
So let's get back to our guest, great Mark Guarino. Now, Mark, we first became acquainted when you contacted me to interview me
last year
for the Lynn Drury cover story.
And I think, did I talk to you? I did something on Loose Cattle, too.
Okay.
Maybe before then I may have talked to you about that, but maybe not. So I've been writing about music since the mid-90s, and... But of writing about New Orleans music probably is just as long.
So you're in hard journalism, but then you're hanging out at Fitzgerald's all the time. You're learning about all this music.
It's weird. So I was a music critic back then for about 11 years. And so at that point in Chicago, it was a pretty exciting time to be in Chicago.
So many great bands.
It was this kind of this height of this alt country era. But not only that, it was all this like these commercial rock bands. There were all these, I mean, Chicago, I felt, was the center of the universe during this period of time in the 90s. There was so much going on. Nothing's matched that since, to that level of, you can go out 7 nights a week, you could see these incredible bills. But at the time, you didn't know, it was anything special other than it was exciting. But really, it was a great time to be writing about music and really immersed in music during that time. And I was, again, kind of like a kid in the candy store again, because I got a full-time job being a music critic, which is a job that no longer really exists anymore. And I hung on to that job for about 11 years. And then once that was over, I realized that full-time writing about music was just not there. That was on its way out.
Right.
This is not interesting.
Well, I mean, whether you thought it was interesting or not, they're just critics. There was just, you know, art critics, architecture critics, any sort of fine art critics. That was on the way out. That was not going to be a sustainable job. And to be a critic, you need to have, I mean, I was a reporter before then, so I had chops in that realm. And so one thing I did learn about, while a lot of my friends were running to get media jobs in New York or to go to both coasts, I realized that by staying put, I could get a lot of work working for national media outlets in Chicago, because none of these national media outlets had anybody, you know, in Chicago. Because if I went to New York, I would have been one of a million people my age scrambling for work. Staying put in Chicago, I was not. And so that's kind of been my, you know, full-time gig starting in about 2008 or so, and really it was the start of Obama as well, because there was so much renewed interest in Chicago because of the president. We never had a president like him at all, and a president from a big city, and so that there was that kind of renewed interest.
He smoked a lot of crack in Chicago.
You know what? So I did not. My sources didn't uncover that. I didn't cover that, but I'm sure there's something like.
Cigarettes.
I'm sure that came out of Breitbart. I think the Breitbart covered that story.
He's a good guy.
Alex Jones covered that.
He seems like a good guy.
He was a good guy. He was a man of the people.
Well, you know. Back to something you were talking about is the fertile scene in the 90s, the band, like Liz Phair. You were there for Liz Phair, whole Wicker Park scene, Rainbow, and Brad Wood, all the great
great bands like Fig Dish, these fans like Local H,
Veruca Salt,
Smashing Pumpkins,
I was a huge fan of that band as but man, just one after another.
It was like every garage had a band in it.
Right.
You know, and also
half
the other
of them were great.
The funny thing is that there was this lineage to Cheap Trick too. Cheap Trick was the elder statesman of all these bands, because they all kind of were in the realm of this kind of heavy guitars, but really poppy hooks.
Right.
And And so Cheap Trick was around, and it felt like they were the kind of the elder statesman of all those bands that were coming out of Chicago at the time. But at the same time, there was also like there was that scene, and then there was this kind of like country scene as well. And that's what I write about in my book,
right?
Of
a great book
coming
that we
out
have that you brought us here, country and Midwestern Chicago in the history of country music and the folk revival.
That's it, yeah. And so, you had these labels like Bloodshot Records kind of documenting these scenes, and this was kind of the underground scene. So you had the kind of the commercial scene of all these bands that were being signed to major labels left and right, and there were so many of those bands. The Smoking Popes, that's another great one.
Right. Well, you had John Langford moving there then.
Yeah, John Langford moved there from the Mekons.
Former guest of the show.
Oh, really? Yes. So yeah, so the scene kind of gravitated around John and a few other kind of key figures, and you had a bunch of labels like Bloodshot. You had a lot of clubs. You had bands. Jeff Tweedy moved to town,
right,
and had formed Wilco. And so that scene really kind of amazingly took off. It was like everything was in the right place and its right time. And it's interesting that like about 10 years later, you saw the major labels kind of co-opting that scene in many ways, which I think is inevitably happens.
Right.
But so you had labels like Yep Rock and Lost Highway and New West that were just kind of capture this sort of singer-songwriter Americana scene.
Were you there for Smashing Pumpkins?
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
I went to when I was at Loyola, James Iha, the guitar player,
yeah.
He was at Loyola when I was there. I remember him. He would be playing gigs, but he would walk across. He was an art major.
And he always dined and ditched. I remember that about
that's
him.
That's right.
He would
that's
always
right.
dine and ditch.
He did. He did.
Know?
He couldn't eat anywhere.
Because when they got signed to Virgin Records, and I used to work for Virgin Records,
okay,
I went down to Atlanta to interview the band.
Yes, that's on YouTube. You can see Manny's whole interview.
Oh, that's great.
The whole day he spent
with the Pumpkins.
With the Pumpkins.
And they hated my guts.
they were
not happy with me.
It was a bad situation. They were in the middle of making a record, and the record company sent Manny to go interview him.
Influenced them to get the fucking album made, you know. And Butch Vig, God bless. I like Butch Vig.
Oh, yeah. I love
he's
Butch,
good,
man. Yeah, yeah.
That's a great dude. Name, Butch Vig.
Yeah, he's a great drummer too,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
love,
well,
love his
who's
band.
The Letterman drummer? Was that Butch Vig?
Yes. No, Anton Vig.
Oh, Anton Vig. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, anyway, I went down to Atlanta after being here in New Orleans interviewing Iggy Pop.
Okay.
For his black metal album.
Which one was that? Was that called Black
Metal?
It was,
called Skull Ring.
Skull Ring. I remember that one.
How's
okay.
That?
Yeah,
it was
produced by Malcolm Byrne. Recorded at Lanois Studio.
Lanois. Don't get me started on that guy. That guy's a jerk.
One of your favorites.
Yeah.
Anyway.
A fucking idiot.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Anyway, we'll never have him on the show, so I don't care.
I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
He was just in Chicago, actually, a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Maybe coming back to town.
Being arrested for possession? Like Santana?
Well, so Mark, talking about this folk scene, subject of your book, you deal with the whole deep history, 100 years of folk music, and I guess it kind of, at one time, even before Nashville, they had like the most popular national country radio show starting back in the 20s or something.
Yeah, I mean,
is that
one thing.
People coming up from the south, migrate part of the
that's
northern
it.
Migration.
I mean, it was sort of the second, it was the other great migration where it's all these Appalachians from the upper south moving up for work. And it was also in the 20s, like the new technology was radio. And so all these radio stations started. So WLS started in 1924. And the first month it was on the air, it started the Barn Dance, which became like a radio format, like a variety show of all these string band players playing music. And that kind of was so popular, the show became, the first couple shows were so popular, they made it a permanent part of its schedule. And that predated the Grand Ole Opry. In fact, the original announcer for the WLS Barn Dance moved because he was getting all these accolades. He got lured away from WSM in Nashville to start the Grand Ole Opry using the exact same format. But it was really because Chicago at that point in time for about 20 years until about like the late 40s, it was kind of it had the recording studios, it had all the major labels, it had the artists, and that's kind of was because it was the major center of the country, and Nashville was still pretty much a small town. It really wasn't until the 50s that that's, you know, everything we think of as Nashville country music establishment, that's when that all started to get going, and it kind of started to die out in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the early country music stars were also on the barn dance as well. Gene Autry, Bill Monroe. And it's amazing, you know, through the research, learning, like, Bill Monroe recording Blue Moon of Kentucky. He recorded that on Michigan Avenue in Chicago.
No, no kidding. You know,
Flatt and Scruggs recorded in downtown Chicago.
Wow.
The Carter Family recorded in downtown Chicago because the major labels were there.
Right.
Mercury Records and Decca.
Now, you're talking about Jimmy Carter?
No, Jimmy Carter came later.
Okay.
So Jimmy Carter. Billy could have been early.
Yeah.
Billy could have been earlier.
Maybell Carter.
Yeah. Maybell Carter, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know Jimmy Carter is still alive, isn't he?
No.
J.D. Vance visited him about a year ago.
He died.
And then,
Okay.
So anyway. I'm sorry.
He seems like a good guy.
J.D. Vance?
Carter.
Oh, Carter.
I don't know who J.D. Vance is. J.D. Vance, our vice president, right?
Right, yeah.
He is,
yeah,
and also this specter of death.
Right, right, yeah. Grim Reaper.
The Grim Reaper.
For the Pope.
Yeah.
Now, I know, you know, you still have, like one time the Iguanas played at the Old Town School
of Folk
Music.
Yeah, the Old Town School of Folk Music. So, yeah, that place is, you know, had a really profound effect on the national folk scene when it opened in 1957, because there hadn't been a school or a place for not just people to learn. You know, at that time it was odd to learn guitar. You know, now everyone's got a guitar in their home, but at that point, you know, middle class people just wanting to learn guitar music was unusual.
Now, when
it was totally new.
When was that
1957.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in the 50s. Yeah, and so. The Old Town School started, but the thing is, it gave musicians a place to teach, a lot to learn. It created a scene, and so it was sort of this, like, other cities didn't have that, and so when folk music died out in the 60s because of rock and roll, like Greenwich Village, you know, was gone, you know, that whole scene died out. By the 70s, it continued like a second folk boom because of the Old Town School was there, because it provided jobs for musicians. It was a place to hang.
Center of gravity.
It was a center of gravity, exactly. Right. And so out of that scene came the second scene, which produced all these singer-songwriters, most notably John Prine, Steve Goodman, a bunch of other wonderful songwriters, Merv Griffin. Maybe his son, but yeah, Merv beamed down, I think, a couple of nights. But yeah, so that's what made it kind of a really interesting, you know, really kind of profound influence on Chicago and the greater scene.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, you're still, even though you do have your foot so deep in the music, you still do, like, straight reporting all the time. You still work for ABC.
So I'm at ABC now, and the music has kind of gone, it's become more of a, you know, like
avocation,
like, for instance,
like for me.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
It's
the music,
a hobby.
It has.
It's
like
a calling. We were talking about this the other day.
It's a vocation, you know?
Vocation,
I mean,
right.
I think,
like,
even just like
the priesthood.
That's exactly it. I mean, I feel like, I mean, it kind of goes back to being curious about people that, like, I mean, it's a really great, I feel like, I don't know what else I would do. But yeah, so for ABC, that's kind of my full-time gig, but I also write books.
And plays,
yeah, exactly. Because Chicago has a really, you know, that kind of even goes back further, because Chicago, when I came up, Chicago had this incredible storefront theater scene, and still does, and so that really was this great outlet for, just as a kid, writing. And I went in the 90s, I got into it, and I kind of fell into a great group of people who were doing the same thing I did. And it's like, yeah, it's I was telling a friend of mine the other day, I saw her play. She had a premiere play she wrote, and I was walking, I saw the play, it was great, and it was like this 40 seat theater, and and the play, it's the production and the acting that could be on Broadway.
Yeah.
It was such a this high level. But it was in a theater that probably, again, like maybe a 40-seat theater. I remember walking back to my car thinking, this is what Chicago does really, really well. You know, it's just like, it's just kind of doing this very high-level art for not profit-motivated art, you know. And I think that, to me, even though it seems naive, you know, I think it's there's still great value in that because, and it's the same thing with music, you know, people in bands, you know, I think that I just find that really inspiring because it's not just like, hey, this is a jokey thing we're doing on the side of our, you know, money gigs. It's like, no, this is, we are serious about this.
No,
and we're gonna supersede the so-called pros, you know.
Yeah, you know, we're not trying to get rich. We're trying to save our souls, Mark.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly.
That's what is at issue here.
The eternal itch that must be scratched, you know?
Yeah, I feel
like that to me is, I mean, again, I keep going back to vocation, you know? It's so inspiring to kind of be around people, you know, writers, directors, you know, production people who are just really doing it because they want to have that pure artistic experience, you know,
right.
and it seems like the world's gone so cynical that you wouldn't think that that's been kind of squeezed out, but luckily it hasn't. So
yes, yeah. It's more necessary than ever to soldier on as by way of example, but just to keep from, you know, from doing some self-harm.
Driving into a brick wall.
Right, exactly.
But I think part of it is like the community. It's like when I was at your gig the other day, it's like you're seeing all these people there and a lot of people knew each other. Maybe a lot of people didn't. But it's like, I think that's the new community. I mean, sense of community. I mean, before people lived in small towns or small villages and that would be kind of like your community. And I feel like the music and theater and in the art world at the local level, I feel like that is sort of like I think that's kind of emerged to be sort of its purpose is community.
Yeah, you know? But his audience is very, very old.
Yeah, yeah.
They're old community.
Yeah.
Well, they're just community.
They're on
they're
Medicaid
community nonetheless.
Or Medicare.
You know what? That is actually not necessarily true because when I went up and I got a T-shirt from him, the person before me was a very young girl also buying a T-shirt and was telling you that she, I don't know how she discovered the band or something like that. But,
well, he's sleeping with her probably.
Definitely not.
Yeah,
that's probably what's going on.
There's no sleeping going on.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you're playing.
That's what he says.
Jazzfest hired me to do the bios for the Jazzfest program this year, and so I went through all the bios. And you're in about at least 10 of these bands that are playing Jazzfest. You know, it's amazing.
It's very.
You're busy. You're busy.
I'm leading a blessed life. Yeah. So, God has always shown His face on me.
You're the busiest man in town.
Oh no, there's plenty of guys working more than me, but. You know, I'm happy to be participating. I'm so blessed to have all these, and they're all great, man. There's nobody I play with that I think, oh, that's a bummer gig. They're all so fun. And
yeah, why would you do it? Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm very, very fortunate. Well, so you still do like Hard News, and Chicago has a lot of, like, we have our mayor troubles here. You know, Manny is the people have refused to put Manny in office in spite of the obvious, you know.
There's still time.
Yeah, still time.
But Chicago's had its run of interesting mayors. I think the guy that's in there now, I see on certain YouTube videos where the city council or the aldermen, whatever they're called.
They're rebelling.
Freaking out. The populace is freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's kind of a Cantrell-type figure.
So fuck you. I'm going to do what I want.
That's right. And it's sort of like, when I came up under the second Daley, who was mayor for about 21 years, I believe, and it was a rubber stamp city council, and it was just kind of, you know, he was a Daley. You didn't cross him, and he had so much control over everything. And then we had Rahm Emanuel after him,
mm-hmm.
and Rahm Emanuel kind of was in the sort of shadow of Obama. White House.
Yeah,
and then he can kind of, the thing started to crack from there, and you started to see, and then we had Lori Lightfoot, who was a mayor, she was a reform-minded candidate.
And she was a Native American, Lightfoot?
I don't think she was. I don't think so.
She had an odd look. She looked like she might have been from outer space.
Yeah, she was very, she was, she was, as unusual of a Chicago mayor. I mean, she broke the template. You know, she was
she broke something.
Yeah, she was. She was not. She was a gay black woman mayor, which Chicago has never had before. So she broke through that. And then, and so it's like, the point is that, like, the whole city council control started to erode under Rahm Emanuel because, he wasn't a daily, and that's kind of where you things where you have things now. And this guy, he's probably not going to be a second term mayor, and he's deeply unpopular.
Yeah.
And
seems like it.
Yeah.
So, I know a little bit about Chicago.
Yeah.
So... where are the Italians? On the north side?
All right. So, no, it's several different places.
Yeah, okay.
So, the Italians are on the northwest side.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't in Chicago. So, in areas like Melrose Park, Norwood Park, the collar community.
Okay, but then where are the Irish?
And the Irish are... South Side Irish, in a neighborhood called Beverly.
So they're Cubs fans.
They're Cubs fans, yeah. It's funny because... go on.
No, go ahead. No.
Because Wrigleyville is kind of... it's one of those neighborhoods that used to... It's a very transient community now, you know? It's not like people don't really live there, or it's really a... it's a lot of apartments, and it's a lot of... It's very wealthy. It's not an old school neighborhood
it's
anymore.
Kind of Boys Town is right.
Boys Town's right next to that. It's become a lot more wealthy than when I went to school. It's a really amazing, very expensive city.
So the Irish are in the south. Yeah. The Italians are in the north.
Yeah.
But there's Mexicans working everywhere, right?
Southwest Side, South Side,
and all that kind of
stuff. Yeah,
there's a huge Mexican music scene in Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, huge! Yeah. Absolutely.
They're working they're bussing every table, they're washing every dish.
Oh yeah, you can get every one thing that's still good about Chicago is that. You have every ethnicity, you can go eat around the world if you wanted to. That's every type of restaurant there, and that's still pretty amazing.
Here in New Orleans, you can puke in every part of the world,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, right.
You can puke.
Or puke every different color of the world.
Sure,
yeah.
That's what I enjoy about this place.
Man, I heard the story about this guy who was a conjunto musician, Mexican musician in Chicago, and he said there's a whole scene there where a band sets up their equipment at a club, like on a Friday or Saturday night. They play a set, then they go outside, a van picks you up, brings you to another club, you play on another band's equipment, then after you play a set there, you do that 5 times, and at the end of the night, they bring you back to your equipment. You play 5 clubs in a night.
Wow. You're on that show Law and Order, right?
Somebody needs to make a reality series of that or something. That's amazing.
And the guy who was telling us the story, he was just saying, I can't remember who it was, but somebody, telling the Iguanas, the Mexican guy, and he was saying, like somebody complained about it, and they pulled out a hammer and broke his hand.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I'm going to stop this right now. Yeah,
so, they run a tight ship.
That's out of the Sopranos, right there.
Yeah, yeah, crazy man.
Oh, I have a funny. You were talking about your mayor. When she was elected, and I covered some of that race, her name was really familiar to me. Then I realized why, because. A few years earlier, I did a story for the Washington Post on Irvin Mayfield.
Oh,
the
okay.
New Orleans trumpeter who went to federal prison because he stole a bunch of money for the Library Foundation.
$1.6 million.
Yes. And
still hasn't paid it back.
Yes. And so he was, it's an unbelievable scandal, and it's like, it's galling and all of that.
Right.
That he used this Library Foundation. He stole money from essentially kids.
Yes.
And then he made a gold trumpet and all
all
that.
Crazy.
It's really cool. So I did this story and I interviewed all these people who were angry about how they gave money to his foundation and all this. And I said, well, I need to find somebody who there's got to be somebody who supports him. And so I looked around, made some phone calls, talked to some people, and I did interview somebody who supported him at the time, and her name was Latoya Cantrell. And she's in my story talking about how, you know,
He's a good guy, son of New Orleans.
People are trying to bring him down and everything like that. And so when she was elected mayor, I was like, I know that name. And I did a search on my computer. I'm like, it's her. She's the one person I found who defended Irvin Mayfield.
Right, right. Well, she still is.
I know he's been trying to play gigs and
But I
always feel like I get aggravated when I see him. Because, you know, I just think that there's nothing worse to me than, like, especially post-Katrina, all that kind of goodwill about, like, we're going to rebuild New Orleans and try to support the arts and everything. This guy was taking all that money and, you know, he was booking himself at, he rented out Carnegie Hall and pretended that he filled it up naturally. He got booked at Carnegie Hall. You know, limos and gold-plated trumpets and all that other stuff.
Stayed at the Ritz or the Four Seasons.
The Ritz. Oh, he was living large.
Enough time spent on that. Moving on. Well, we're kind of... He's a good guy. Well, we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast here, Mark. And, you know, you and I could talk forever, obviously.
Absolutely. But, I gotta go to sleep, Mark.
Man. He's gotta go.
I know. It's late.
I have two Jazz Fest appearances tomorrow, and then a nighttime gig. So I gotta go get some rest.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. This is
we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
And always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends,
but it continues the struggle. Good night.
Good night.
Gonna get myself some coffee. Maybe buy me something sweet. Away there to the pushers. Say hey there to the beat. Gonna trip the light fantastic. Gonna relish life in heat. Gonna hook the moon up like a balloon. I'm gonna walk down Royal Street. Gonna hang on the lamppost. Don't the dead fish smell so sweet? I'll pretend I like you Yankees here as I walk down Royal Street. You don't have to call me Colonel, but please, madam, be discreet. I got the wormwood in my spirit as I walk down Royal. Frenchman's feet, and arm in arm with my Creole girl, I'll walk down Royal Street. Gonna trip the light fantastic. Gonna relish life in heat. Gonna hook the moon up like a balloon. I'm gonna walk down Royal Street. Don't the dead fish smell so sweet? I'll pretend I like you Yankees here as I walk down Royal Street. You don't have to.